October 2021 is going to bring some sweeping new changes to the personal insurance space. Income protection policies will be the most affected, and policies will look vastly different. Today's guest is Sasha Lukowski, who is a specialist insurance broker. In this conversation, Sasha explains some of the new changes and the difference between level and stepped premiums. We also discuss how doctors can approach their insurance cover as we progress through our careers. Having seen at least two close colleagues access policy benefits in the past year, I can't imagine what life for them and their families would be like if they didn't have their insurance safety net. If you haven't got your insurance sorted out, time is running out. If you have a colleague who might be a bit blasé in this area of life, please share this episode with them too. Hey, I'm Andrew, and this is the Medical Money Podcast, where we talk about personal finance, investing, and other random topics to make you a happier human. If you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review and share the episode with someone you care about. You can connect with me via my blog, medicalmoney.com, and just remember that the content of this podcast is general in nature and not personal financial advice. Podcast guests are sharing their own opinions and may hold positions in companies discussed. Please seek professional advice before making any financial decision and always read the product disclosure statements. Welcome back, Sasha, and thanks for joining me again today. How are you?
I am well, thank you. Thanks for having me back. It's been a little while between sessions, but there's a lot to update your listeners on, so I think it'll be a good session today.
Definitely, lots of listeners definitely wanting to know what is happening between the next few months of changes in insurance. So today's episode is going to be really good. We did an episode together last year after the first round of insurance changes took place in March 2020. That was episode 14 for the guys that haven't listened to it. And very soon, October this year, we're going to see another round of changes to income protection. And that's why you're here. But before we begin, can you share with us what you do and your areas of specialty?
Absolutely. So I am a specialist insurance advisor. I am a financial advisor by trade, I guess you'd call it, by qualification, but I only choose to advise in insurance strategies, so risk management strategies. So I advise all different types of clients from their personal needs right through to their business needs. And yes, all different types of clients across many different occupations and life areas.
So this is all you do. You've got quite a few medical clients as well.
I do, yeah. So I've been a specialist risk advisor for coming up to, goodness, I think it's more than 10 years, maybe even 15 years now. And yes, I do have quite a few clients as medico clients across all different types of medical profession as well. So I'd like to think I have some experience to pass on to your listeners that are specific to their profession.
Yeah, today we're going to talk a lot about income protection because that's where a lot of focus is on premium increases. But can you just briefly explain the different types of personal insurance and what they cover?
Absolutely. So we'll start with income protection because that's the focus. So income protection is designed to replace your income in the event that you cannot work due to any sickness, accident, or injury for either a short time or a long time. So it's really designed to pay the bills, put the food on the table, pay the mortgage or the rent, just address the everyday costs of living. Now, the other types of insurance are what we call lump sum covers. So the first one that everyone's familiar with is life insurance, and that is simply cover in the event that the insured person passes away. It is designed to provide a lump sum of capital, financial capital, to provide for the insured person's family left behind. So we're going to be paying down debt, ideally, you know, get rid of the mortgage on the personal home, potentially provide education expenses for children, provide a little bit of a nest egg in a way for the family left behind to get back on their feet. Excuse me. The next, and often you'll see these two policies linked together, life and total and permanent disability cover, often shortened to TPD. TPD cover is all in the name. So when you think about it, you have to be totally and permanently disabled to claim on this policy. You kind of have to never be able to work ever again. So in terms of finality of cover, it's pretty far along the spectrum in terms of severity. If you are claiming on this policy, you've had a health event that means you're never going to work, in your listener's case, in the medical profession ever again. So when we think about why that cover is often linked to life insurance, it's because the financial ramifications are, in a way, kind of similar. So we want to pay down debt on you know, especially your principal place of residence, to make sure the bank isn't hassling you for that. We want to make sure that there's a little nest egg left to provide capital funding for any expenses associated with the health event that's happened to the insured person, and, you know, potentially provide education expenses for children and that sort of thing. So there's a similarity between the purpose of life and TPD cover. The next one is trauma cover. This one's a bit poorly named in my experience. When we think of trauma, we think of car accident trauma. But what this is, you know, it's critical illness. It's a serious illness cover. And this policy says, okay, you've been diagnosed with something bad like cancer, but it might not kill you. And it might not mean that you are totally and permanently disabled, but it is going to knock you about for a couple of years. So take this lump sum of money and use it to recover, use it to get better. So it's, you know, of all of the policies that I deal with, in a way I call it my positive vibes cover, because it's really saying use it to go, you know, get yourself better, get yourself sorted and recover. So that's sort of the more common policies that I work with in a nutshell. So I hope that's been instructive.
Yeah, no, I like that positive vibes cover, because and having seen a few friends who've had to trigger their trauma policies, not TPD, fortunately, but and some life actually, it's good to know that there is just that, you know, maybe 1-2 years, you know, income that you're able to get better, not think about the mortgage, and then return to work in, you know, close to full capacity after say cancer treatment or a heart attack or a motor vehicle accident. Yeah, so let's take a look at the income protection insurance side of things, because that's what's hurting people the most at the moment. I got my quote for this year's policy, I think, a couple of weeks ago, and having been on a level premium since 2015, this year it's gone up by, I think, around about 70%. Mm-hmm. Other doctors have gone up kind of 30 to 70 as well, I think. What is going on right now in the industry, and why is it happening?
Yeah, so look, it's a fascinating time, you know, to use the word blithely, I guess, because it's not fascinating for policyholders. I'm in a similar boat to you. I got my renewal and was in a state of shock, and I do this for a living, so I can understand where, you know, your listeners and yourself are coming from when you are genuinely shocked by that. So what's been happening to result in these sorts of premium increases on income protection is the current suite of income protection policies are simply premium unsustainable. So the history to that is that insurance companies tried to outdo each other with really good quality policies. So from a quality point of view, the policy that, you know, you have and that I have, they are amazing quality policies. They are so generous. You know, there's terms on my policy where I can make a claim and actually still be working. I mean, that kind of defies logic for the intended purpose of the policy. So what we're seeing is these really, really generous policies have resulted in a massive claims experience, especially amongst white-collar, high-income earning professionals. And so now the insurance companies have to recoup those losses by increasing premiums at an extremely unsustainable rate. So that's sort of the technical aspect as to why it's happened.
Mm. And so last year there was the first round of big changes. We talked about that in our last interview. Can you please explain what changed last year for the guys who aren't quite up to speed?
Yeah, so basically these changes have come about as a result of APRA, the Australian Prudential Regulation Authority, stepping in and saying, insurers, you've messed it up, right? You've been way too generous. You've shot yourself in the foot. These premiums and these products are unsustainable. It will cause you to go broke. So we as an external regulator have to step in and fix it. And these are our recommendations to fix income protection, premium and product sustainability in Australia. The first change that was enforced on the 1st of April, actually a year ago, because we are recording this on the 1st of April. So a year ago today, the first change came in, which was that we are removing agreed value payments in the event of claim and moving to indemnity. So what that meant was agreed value said that you can lock in your monthly benefit, your insured amount, it will be agreed in the event of a claim. And no matter how your income may have dropped at the time of claim, you will be paid what you are insured for. So you can see how potentially if someone goes on sabbatical or changes jobs or goes on maternity leave or something like that, how they could actually receive more than 100% of their income at time of claim. So all the policies available now are on what's called an indemnity basis. You won't really see that listed in the policy per se because it's no longer an option. There'll be the definition of it, but it's not a specific option anymore. So this says, indemnity says, you will be paid the lesser of what you are insured for on the policy and what you are able to prove at time of claim. And it is a bit more generous than that. So it's not saying, you know, at exact time of claim. There's usually a window of the best 12 consecutive months period in the previous 3 years before claim, for example. So there's still some generosity and flexibility built into that, but it's definitely no longer as generous a definition as it was prior to the 1st of April last year.
And so is there still a percentage limit on the indemnity claim? If we moved to stop from agreed value, but now across indemnity, is it 70% still as a fixed thing, or can people choose what level of cover they're going to have as a percentage?
Yeah, so it's up to a maximum of 75% of your gross before tax income, and you could choose to be covered for less than that percentage if you want, but capped at 75%. And I really should make clear, because a lot of people are concerned as to where their current policy sits. If you took out your policy before the 1st of April last year, so before the 1st of April 2020, you are not affected by these changes. Insurers cannot pass these terms back to policyholders. But if you took out a policy from the 1st of April 2020, you are affected by these changes. So I just do want to make that clear for your listeners.
That you hold on to those policies if you've got them, because you can't get them as of exactly 1 year ago today, right? Yeah. And so one of the someone posted in one of our Facebook groups that they took their new policy, which was significantly increased, to the ombudsman and got part of the premium refunded. Have you heard of other people being able to do this and being successful in it?
I haven't heard of this before, but it does not surprise me, and I support the action. I think it's important if you feel that the premiums increases are unsustainable, you absolutely should, and you do have the right to do that. I mean, you know, when you look at investment properties and rental increases, if you choose to, if as a landlord you want to increase the rent on your property, it has to be fair and reasonable. So I don't see why that shouldn't be applied to insurance premiums as well.
And so what are the changes that we can expect to see later this year and into the future? Some people are saying it's going to be a total bloodbath. You guys don't sound like the insurance companies are necessarily giving you the best guidance as well. What are things that you see on the horizon?
Yeah, so it's been quite interesting. So when APRA came out with their first round of changes, those first round of changes were a recommendation, and the first came in on the 1st of April last year. Now, in December of 2020, APRA came out with a revised set of proposed changes to come into force on the 1st of October 2021 this year. So what, as advisors, we had sort of been prepped for in the first round, some of those have changed. So there's about 10 major changes. Now, I'm happy to go through all of them with your listeners today, or I can pick out a couple of the ones that I see as major. So what would you prefer?
Yeah, I think go with the, well, I mean, all 10 would be good, but I think the major ones, maybe dig a bit deeper into those, because obviously they're going to have the greatest effect in people's, you know, decision-making process.
Yep. Absolutely. So look, if I were to pick out the major ones, one of the ones that is coming out at the moment is saying, for the first 6 months of claim on an income protection policy, the insurance benefits that you can receive cannot exceed 90%. So at the moment, it's 75%, but the insurers are saying, well, because most claims are quite intensive and tend to be wrapped up within 6 months, we'll pay you up to 90% of your income, which is quite good. I think that's a great change. The caveat that concerns me long term is that once your benefit payments go beyond 6 months on claim, the benefit that you will receive will drop to 70%. So the ratio will go from 90% of your pre-disability income for the first 6 months of claim to 70% for beyond 6 months claim and ongoing. Now, that I think is a good change for the first 6 months. But beyond that, I, as an advisor, have to ask myself for my clients, well, is 70% of your pre-disability income sustainable for the potential long term? Because don't forget, income protection claim benefits are then taxed because they are considered income. So if you're only receiving 70% of your pre-disability income on a long-term disability and then it's taxed, is that actually going to be enough to meet those requirements of paying the bills, the mortgage, the rent, putting food on the table? So that's a little bit concerning to me. What is also not clear is how that is actually going to work in practice, because right now you go to your advisor and you say, my income is $100,000 gross, just to keep numbers very simple. And then, so we say, great, well, then your 75% income that we can cover is $75,000. That's going to be your 12-month income protection benefit. What is not clear to any advisor right now is, well, if the 6-month claim is 90%, but then it drops to 70%, how can we actually insure, what's the actual insured amount that we're going to recommend for our clients? And how do we ensure that clients aren't overpaying because at some point the ratio drops from 90 to 70? Does that sort of make sense to you?
Yeah, that makes sense. So we're looking at maybe a 6-month at a higher rate, but then dropping down to the 70% after that. And so how long will that payment last for then? Will there be a border as to where the 70% ends and drops down or stops?
No border yet. And just to give a bit of clarity, benefits are still proposed to run through to age 65. So you can still get a long-term policy as such. However, there is questions, and this is one of the other changes, there's potential questions about how insurers, product designers, I'll call them, can ensure that very long-term income protection claims, of which I have several clients who are on claim for the rest of their life per se, up to age 65 when the policy will expire. What APRA is definitely concerned about, look, after 2 years on claim, it's very unlikely that people actually get back to work, at least get back to work at the level or income level that they were at prior to claimable event. So APRA's bandying about, well, after 2 years of claim, does the income replacement ratio keep dropping? Perhaps at the 2-year claim mark, the ratio drops from 70% to 60% and then to 50% over a certain amount of time to try to encourage people back to work. But it doesn't seem congruent with the logic that the longer a person is off work, the harder it is to get back to work. So there are a lot of questions from the advice community, back to APRA and back to product providers and product developers right now, saying that's just not feasible. The reality is that's not feasible. So that's definitely a concern for us as well.
Hmm. Yep. Okay. And so what are some of the other changes that are the big ticket ones?
Yeah. So I do believe this we covered this briefly in our last podcast, and it has been on the cards for a while, which was the policy term shall not exceed 5 years. Now, a policy term is different to a benefit period. So you can still have the benefit period, i.e. the time the insurer will pay you for how long you are off work, up to age 65. That will still exist. The policy term says that an income protection contract will only last for 5 years. Once the 5 years is up, the insured person will have to reapply for cover for another 5-year term. It's going to have serious ramifications. Now, the drop down, I guess, or the questions that I can immediately see popping into people's minds are, well, what is reapplying? What does that look like? So after the initial 5 years and at every 5-year increment, policy increment, the policy can be renewed without medical underwriting. So that's a huge win. Your medical changes cannot be taken into account. However, at every 5-year increment, your income will need to be disclosed again, your occupation will need to be disclosed again, and any dangerous pastimes, sports, or hazardous activities will need to be disclosed, and those will be underwritten.
Right. Okay. Yep. So that changes a little bit, because I suppose a lot of us, we've taken on good policies while we're in the premium working time, but then a lot of people scale back once their mortgage drops off. That'll need to be reassessed if you've dropped your income, over that period that you've been insured since starting your policy. Yeah, and then In terms of the activities and the social things, you know, people, their kids grow up and they want to start going skiing with their kids, or they, you know, get divorced and start taking up skydiving or get a race car. How much does that impact on the policy premiums?
It's not the premiums per se. Hazardous activities and sports exclusions are not factored into costing because it's an exclusion. So they simply exclude it. So, you know, I've got medical professional clients of mine who have taken up motorsports racing. So you might not have that exclusion on your policy, you know, for the first 5 years, but then you decide to take it up. And then on the next 5-year term, you have a motorsports racing exclusion. So if you're on the track one day and have an accident that results in injury or, you know, to your person, that's going to be excluded from your income protection policy, which is full on. That's a pretty big trade-off. And, you know, hazardous activities aren't even necessarily as extreme as motorsports racing. You know, I use the term extreme, you know, loosely, but playing soccer on the weekends, that can result in an exclusion or at least a waiting period of maximum a minimum 90 days before you can claim on those injuries. Martial arts, if you, you know, do jiu-jitsu or anything like that, that has an automatic exclusion for income protection. So, you know, it's not as these extreme instances. Now, the occupation change for a lot of your listeners is probably not going to be too dramatic because, you know, most medical professionals tend to be in that sector for the long haul. But, you know, if you are a medical professional who decides they are done and you just need to get out of the profession for a while and, you know, you just decide to go and start your own B&B, you know, in the country in Victoria or something, that is absolutely going to affect your premiums because you've moved into a higher risk category for premium calculation. So these changes aren't, it's not that it's not going to happen to you. These are big changes that only a small lifestyle change that you experience could potentially affect your next 5-year increment term.
Okay. Yep. And what else have we got that's going to hurt?
Where is the pain? Where does it end?
Yeah.
So this is an interesting one, which I don't know how this is. It's not that it's not legal, but it does contravene, in my opinion, the Life Insurance Act of 1995, specifically Section 9A, is that after the initial 5-year term or any of these 5-year terms that you renew at, the terms and conditions issued on your new 5-year term must be based on the policy at time of renewal. So it's a wordy way of saying that at the 5-year renewal mark, the insurer is within their right to offer a policy with different terms and conditions to the previous 5-year term that you had. So this is APRA's response to saying, well, we're not going to allow insurers to lock in these amazing benefit policies anymore. We're going to make sure that insurers keep up with social, lifestyle, economic norms by having policies at 5-year increments that reflect the terms and conditions, you know, in society at that time. So you may lose benefits depending on what's changed in product design in the preceding 5 years. So you take out a policy, you know, on the 1st of October this year with XYZ terms. In 5 years' time at your policy renewal, where you have to do this little reapplication for the next 5-year term, you could have completely different terms and conditions. And that's absolutely within the insurer's right to do that. So that's very concerning for product and definition sustainability, especially for white collar professionals. For me,
So it's not automatic renewal of the same policy terms; it can be totally different. Which essentially is like starting a new policy, then, isn't
correct.
It?
The only thing we're really getting away with is medical underwriting. That the fact that we don't have to do that.
Yep. Also heard about potential for changing from own occupation down to any occupation after a certain time period.
So that feeds into a point I made earlier about one of the changes that APRA is saying is, quote unquote, having effective controls in place to manage the risks associated with a long benefit period. So again, that's a very wordy way of saying, how can APRA ensure that if a client is on long-term claim, that A, their medical condition reflects actually being on long-term claim, and B, premium and cost stability. So one of the ideas that APRA is considering at the moment is that after 2 years on an income protection claim, potentially changing the definition of income protection from own occupation to any occupation. Because if you are so, the theory is, if you are so unable to work beyond 2 years, you kind of should meet the any occupation definition.
And anything else on Santa's list of pain that we haven't already discussed that would be relevant for medics?
Look, one of the other ones that feeds into the point I just made about having effective controls in place to manage the risks associated with long-term benefit periods is, you know, are we going to see limiting claim lengths for certain conditions? So as an advisor, most of the claims that I process on income protection are mental health and musculoskeletal, right? So they're two of the biggest claims areas. So, you know, APRA is saying, well, do we only allow a maximum of 2 years claim time for those conditions? Is that going to address some of these premium instability issues? Which it may well do, but then you have to ask, what is the actual effect to the individual? You know, if we cap a mental health claim at 2 years. So, look, that's really the breadth of the major changes. There are some other ones that are quite technical in nature, and I don't really think you know, need to be discussed at length. Although I'm absolutely happy to direct your listeners to where they can find more information on all of the changes. But the reality is that there's some pretty big changes coming, and at the moment there are a lot of unknowns. There are a lot of questions in these list of changes that advisors such as myself are thinking, well, it's not actually properly fleshed out yet, but it's already April.
Yeah, that's right. There's not a huge amount of time to go, because it seems like, you know, there are the three cohorts, really, the people who were had their insurance sorted out pre-March 2020, this gap between then and October this year, and then after October. So now's the time to kind of review, clean up, and maybe even start the policies in this current phase before the next round becomes set in stone. Mm-hmm. And so with these policies, is the coverage that we've talked about and changes to coverage likely to affect both inside super and outside of super income protection policies?
So in a couple of ways. So when we look at, you know, the concept of inside super, so first of all, I'll address it from, say, an industry super fund. So, you know, a lot of your listeners may be insured on their income protection through HESTA, you know, those sorts of industry funds. A lot of the industry funds have already had caveats like this. So it's not those changes may not affect those policies. At this stage, APRA is applying these changes to retail policies only, which are policies available generally through an advisor. So industry super funds, as far as we can see, not being affected, but that's not completely clear. And whether you have one of these super link type products where, you know, you've got a foot inside the super camp, a foot, you know, outside the super camp, that is considered a retail policy because it's only available through an advisor. So if you have a policy which is called Super Linking or Super Optimizer or Super Maximizer, they will be affected by these changes. But again, it's not clear to us as advisors how these Super Link policies will be affected, if there's any special caveats. So it's a bit of a wordy answer there, but we think the answer is yes, they'll be affected.
As well, yeah. And so a constant discussion point is whether having super inside your super is adequate versus needing to take out a standalone policy. What's your response to this for guys that say that, nah, my super, the small amount that I have in there is adequate?
So you have a general advice warning at the beginning of your podcast, right, Andrew?
Yep, that's right. Good. And we say, this is not advice. We can have another warning. This is general advice.
So look, okay, again, if we break it down to, say, an industry super policy like your HESTAs or your Australian supers or whatever, no, personally, I do not believe they are adequate. Happy to go into that at another time, but no, I don't believe they're adequate. Now, whether you have those super linking, super maximizer, super optimizer type policies, they are adequate from a quality point of view. They're very high quality policies. In fact, they're effectively a very similar quality policy to what you would have in your own name. They're just split into whether they fit the superannuation legislation channel or the, you know, personal channel. So they're kind of the same sort of policy, just really split out for premium and cost management. So that is a, you know, an affirmative could be appropriate for clients, especially medicos.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting seeing the comment streams that come from these, because people who have not made claims and have only in super protection seem like they're okay with it. But the people who have made claims and not had their own personal, out of super policy have said, I wish I had it outside. So yeah, you don't really get both sides of the story usually. And so the changes, are they isolated to income protection when it comes to the premium increases? And will we see the other personal insurances experience the same rise in premium fees?
At this stage, the changes to premiums are isolated to income protection. Those massive premium increases are because of an unsustainable product. Life insurance is very profitable for insurers. So, you're not going to see big increases on life cover. You may see some increases on total and permanent TPD because it's also having a bit of a higher than expected claims experience. And trauma also, it's an interesting one, trauma from a premium sustainability, because often medical science is advancing so rapidly that people are getting diagnosed with conditions a lot sooner and easier now. So we are seeing more claims come through on trauma. But I don't expect any of the massive increases percentage-wise that we see on income protection. However, of course, no crystal ball. So that's just been my experience so far.
And so when someone gets a rise like I did, what are some of the ways that I can have a chat to my broker to say, all right, I still want good amount of cover? How can I reduce my premium?
Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah, because it's definitely a discussion I'm having with a lot of my clients at the moment. So there's a few things we can do. And again, you have to make the call with your advisor as to whether these are in your best interest and meet your personal needs. But some of the things you can do are, if you have a short waiting period of 14 days to, or 30 days, can you blow that out to 90 days? Because that's generally a decent way of saving premium. I think the cost differential between, say, a 30 and a 90-day premium is anywhere from about 15 to 30%, depending on the provider. So it's a big chunk that can be reduced. The benefit period, so, policies are available with a benefit period to age 70. Can you bring that down to age 65? 5 years doesn't sound like a lot, but at that age, that 5 years, for some reason, can actually be quite a premium saver from insurers. Can you bring it down even lower? Some policies are available to age 55, but I don't know if that's a sustainable option for, if you're already in your mid-40s or whatever, is that going to be an appropriate option? You can always change from agreed value to indemnity on your existing policy taken out pre-1st of April 2020. And it's not the worst thing in the world. A lot of people think, indemnity is dodgy. It's not going to look after me. But my feedback often is, if you are a PAYG employee, if you get a set paycheck each week that, is going to be easily provable to an insurance company, then indemnity isn't the worst. It's self-employed people and people who do contract and whose income can fluctuate from 1 year to another that indemnity is more likely to be a problem for, which I know a lot of medicos, are on that sort of contract fluctuate, work at one hospital, work at another, that sort of thing. So, but it is an option. And of course, you can always reduce the amount of cover that you actually have. You can reject those automatic inflation application at each year. It's a small difference, but it does all add up.
And typically the policy criteria doesn't really change when you're decreasing the insurer's risk, does it? So you don't have to do the medical assessments and everything.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, you could sign a napkin and the insurers would accept it because they want you to decrease your risk. So anything that decreases your risk to the insurer, you can sign one page form basically.
And part of them have this indexation for inflation thing. Does that reduce the premium very much at all? Like if you remove that?
So, yeah, indexation is applied each year at renewal. Look, not much, because the indexation is usually, I think it's the lesser of 3% and CPI, and CPI is so low right now. It really only reduces premiums maybe by, 2 or 3%, but it all adds up. So it's definitely an option.
Yeah. Okay, very good. So that's our income protection. Let's move across now to stepped versus level premiums. Can you briefly explain what is meant by stepped and level premiums in terms of personal insurance?
Yeah, so stepped and level premiums are the way that you pay your premiums. So it's reflective of the name. So stepped premiums are just like a flight of steps and they are linked to your age. So every year you get older, the premium steps up in line with that age increase. So when you're young, and less likely to make a claim, your premiums are nice and cheap and those stepped premium increases are percentage-wise quite small. But as you start getting into a quote-unquote higher risk age bracket, say, 40, 45 plus, those stepped premium increases start increasing quite dramatically. Level premiums, again, all in the name. Though Andrew might have something to say about that. Technically, they are designed to remain level over the lifetime of a policy. So the insurers manage that by saying, well, the first year you take out your policy, the level premium may be double or triple the cost of the equivalent stepped premium. But over time, level premiums will end up being significantly cheaper because they will avoid those age-based increases at the back end.
So with this range of increases for income protection, have we seen the same amount for both level and stepped in terms of the increase, or have levels gone up significantly so they're trying to push more people into the stepped policies?
I don't personally feel that they're trying to push people into stepped policies. That's just my gut feel. It could well be that, but I don't feel it's that. We've definitely seen increases on level premiums. Stepped premiums are still the consistently higher increases. So for yourself, Andrew, you may have had a one-year increase by 70%, which is shocking. However, someone on stepped might be getting a 40% increase year on year. So it's a bit of a tough one to answer, but long term, it is still my opinion that level premiums are the better purchase. But we do just it really comes down to individual requirements because if you only really need insurance, and this is not just income protection, but the lump sum policies, life, DPD, trauma. If you really only need those for, 10 years because you've got to service some debt or something like that, then personally, I'd probably put it on stepped premiums. It's really when you need cover beyond a 10-year window that level premiums or a hedged portfolio of some on stepped, some on level is going to be a good outcome.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that in our last episode that you introduced the hybrid approach whereby someone could have a certain amount on stepped and a certain amount on level, and dependent on the individual circumstances, they may have been expecting a inheritance or something like that, then they were able to then stop having their step premium at some point and just keep with that level one in the background. Yeah. And so previously we've been told it's kind of 7 to 10 years as the crossover point. Has that changed, do you think, with the recent changes and the changes that are about to occur?
Haven't seen any changes to that nature come through. However, again, we're relying on projections and data from product providers, from insurers. So as to how accurate that is and whether the changes for income protection have been factored in yet, I don't know. I mean, I do often say to my clients, look, level premiums, I can give you the projections from the insurers, and of course I do, but just be aware that they're kind of not written, not worth the paper they're written on. Insurers do not guarantee the projections. They could just be pulling figures out of nowhere. What is very concerning, and what some of my colleagues and I have effectively come to the conclusion is that if we set our mind back to those income protection changes that I ran through just previously, especially this five-year term and these five-year policies being renewed on potentially completely different terms and conditions of the previous 5 years. It's my feeling that level premiums as we know them on income protection, they can't exist in the current form. They must be dead in the current form. I don't know what the solution is, whether it's a five-year locked-in term for level premiums as well, but I just can't see how the current method of level premiums is conducive to the policies for income protection after the 1st of October 2021.
And so when someone has a policy, it's not transferable between companies, is it? It's every time you reapply with a new company, unless it's swallowed up by another company or acquired, you really are starting fresh again, aren't you?
Correct. For level premiums, yes. If you take out level premiums, you are locking yourself into that company, that product line, with those terms and conditions for the life of the policy.
Anything else on stepped versus level premiums that you think is important for listeners to know about?
Look, I think I've sort of covered it. I do like people to be aware that the projections are not guaranteed. One thing that I would suggest, and I think I don't see it a lot, but the times I've seen it, I've been a little bit concerned, is that if you ask for level premiums from your advisor or from, you know, the advisor that you're getting advice from, please ensure that you ask that inflation be applied to those, because otherwise, yes, you're going to get a level premium, because if inflation is not applied to the sum insured will remain, you know, let's just say for life insurance, you take out $1 million. If you don't ask the advisor to apply indexation, well, then every year the policy is going to be $1 million, and every year the level premium will be the same, which is great. It illustrates the concept perfectly. But most people take inflation, and in fact, inflation is applied automatically by insurers at renewal. You have to specifically reject it. And I do often recommend to people to take the inflation, because it keeps up with inflation and lifestyle creep. So you definitely ask to have the indexation applied to the level premium so you can get a realistic, although not guaranteed, idea of what you can expect long term.
And people can always downgrade their policies as they become essentially self-insured, and their risk of unemployment and getting their kids through school also goes down as they progress through the, you know, to graduation dates.
Correct. You can move a level premium to stepped premiums with just a signature. It doesn't require any underwriting, and you can actually go the other way too. You can go from step to level premiums. That's not an underwritable change. That's quite easy to organise.
Okay, let's move across to talk about insurance at different stages of our medical careers. The big challenge is to strike the right balance between being overinsured and wasting heaps of money, or being underinsured, which doesn't cover you in the event that something bad happens. What are some basic principles doctors should use to approach their insurance purchasing options?
Yeah, so look, I mean, obviously, you know, we want to take into account the different career stages for doctors. So, you know, junior doctors, interns, and then moving through to new consultants, just getting your career and your client base sort of started, and then, you know, moving through to established consultant, and then eventually, you know, selling a business, selling entities, or moving out of the profession. So I'm dealing with a couple of junior doctors at the moment, and what we're sort of building into their policies, both on income protection and lump sum, is obviously we're starting off small because their needs aren't that great. They don't have dependents. It's just them, and they're just getting started. We're building some flexibility into the policy so that we can ensure that as they go through changes, and as they experience, you know, changes in their not qualifications per se, but where they are in their career, that those changes, we can increase the policies as we need to quite simply. Now, what I mean by that is I think it's really important to also try and find a provider through your advisor that leans a little bit more towards medical professionals. Now, one of the providers, and I'm definitely not making a product recommendation, but there is a new provider to market that they've been around for just a couple of years, but they only really specialize in professionals, and specifically medical professionals. I'm sure some of your listeners on, you know, the Facebook pages and the forums probably know or have heard of the insurer, but that's definitely been a bit of a game changer for my medical professional clients, where it's really tailored to understand how medical professionals' careers work. But at the end of the day, I think the most important thing that your listeners can do is have a relationship with an advisor or someone who, you know, a financial advisor, whoever, who will check in on them at least annually to see where they're up to and make changes accordingly. Because different stages of life, and even the changes, if your client's experience just a small change that they don't think is very, you know, consequential, it might actually be a trigger to review, decrease, increase, change, tweak their policies to make sure that the policies reflect their current stage of life.
So the early stages is not a huge amount that that interns can do because their salary is also quite low. But then as we progress to, say, becoming new consultants, when you get that inflection point after you start working as a consultant, the two big things seem to be your mortgage and getting your kids through private school if you want to. Mm-hmm. Then obviously everyone else has to put food on the table and you know, have transport. Mm-hmm. But what are the things that people should consider when they're in their 30s to 40s, consultant level, kids, mortgage, that's reasonable. What are the things that they need to consider?
Look, in terms of the amount of cover, sorry, that's not what I meant. In terms of the type of cover, look, I mean, you know, kids, debts, obligations, definitely life insurance. And, you know, one of the things that I'm often asked is, well, you know, I'm the main income earner for my family. My spouse is a stay-at-home parent or, you know, works part-time. Don't worry about insuring them because they don't earn the money. But, you know, just keep in mind that they might not earn the cash that comes in, but I bet they contribute a lot to that household. So if something were to happen to the potentially non-working or minimally working spouse, they definitely need to be insured because all of a sudden the working spouse is, you know, got two young kids that they have to look after, try and earn the income. So look at it quite holistically at the 30 to 50 sort of age bracket almost. It's a holistic proposition, or at least I believe it should be. It's not just about who earns the money. So debt's a big one, like you said, the private school. So a reasonable amount of life and TPD cover to match or reflect your circumstances or your needs is a big one there. And, of course, making sure your income protection amount of cover keeps up with an exponentially increasing income as well.
And then into the 40s and 50s when you're kind of at the senior consultant level but your kids are then coming towards the end of high school and your mortgage levels can be non-existent or, you know, it's tiny by comparison to your income, what are the insurances that people tend to wind down or get rid of as they hit their, you know, late 40s, early 50s?
Yeah, look, so definitely winding down the need for life insurance at that point if that's your scenario. I personally believe that there is a bit of a longer term need for disability cover, regardless of, you know, potential assets, because, you know, a person may have $5 million, you know, in property, right? Let's call it $5 million without debt. So it's $5 million clear. That's the asset base. But it's also really hard, maybe not in this market, but traditionally it can be really hard to liquidate a bricks and mortar type asset. So I do advocate for still holding on to some sort of, you know, trauma or TPD amount just so that if something happens, there's cash there quickly and then we don't have to fire sale a property or a share portfolio or liquidate an asset that you've spent some time building up just because you've had a serious illness or event. So I am an advocate of holding a little bit of lump sum disability cover through to, you know, 50s, early 60s. And, of course, income protection, you know, for me that's quite an easy one because it just needs to reflect your current income and your current working arrangement. So, again, because we always need food on the table and we always need to pay the bills, I do advocate for a little bit of income protection just until we get into that closer to retirement phase.
And I see some guys around retirement or, you know, 60 to 65 still carrying their income protection insurance. And quite often it's been, you know, divorces and stuff that have taken away what should be a larger asset base underneath them. What sort of cost is it for being income to have income protection into your 60s? Is it crazy given that the risk for the insurer goes up a lot?
Yeah, look, I wish I'd been able to prep some numbers for you, but without being able to give you particular numbers, and I say that because income or any insurance premium is dependent on how much cover, all the options on the policy, whether you're male or female, you know, all those sorts of things. So I can't give you a specific number, but yes, suffice to say it is usually a significant cost.
Yep. And so we've covered the changes, the different premium options, and we're recording this 1st of April, like you said earlier on. What's your advice to doctors who don't yet have any personal insurance or haven't reviewed their policies in a while?
Yeah, look, it's really time. It's the last chance. So it's the last chance to get a decent quality policy without all of those five-year terms and all of that. That's really the biggest worry for me is those five-year incremental terms. So for, you know, your listeners who have existing income protection who might be thinking, geez, my premium increased hugely in the last year. I just got my renewal notice. Look at it now, because you can potentially, if the advice is given to do this, move to the current series policies that are indemnity but still have all of the whiz-bang quality benefits on your current policy. So you might be able to save some premium there. For new entrants, do it. It's just there's no other option. You need to get this now unless you're happy with these policies coming in. Now, the policies coming in on the 1st of October, they are definitely a deviation from what I am used to as an advisor and, you know, you, Andrew, are used to as a policyholder. Are they bad policies? On the surface of it, no. They're just very different, and I don't think that they obviously offer the same level of protection that existing policyholders or people who get in now will be able to get. However, what's going to happen, what we're all seeing, what I've seen on my own income protection policy is that insurers will price us out of these policies. Every year now, for the existing policyholders for income protection, your premiums will continue to go up exponentially because insurers do not want us on these costly, ineffective policies that are costing them money. I don't know for sure, but just my gut feel is that we've probably got about 5 to 10 years max, depending on your individual circumstances and appetite for premium increases, to be able to retain these policies before they just become unsustainable for an individual, at which point we'll have to move on to these new October policies or whatever there is available in 10 years. So if you're already questioning these premium increases, it's definitely a good time to review and just see what your capacity is, knowing that you will be forced off this policy by the insurers.
So a greater impetus to make sure you get your self-insurance kind of policies up during that time if it's going to become crazy or not covered for a long period. Thank you very much again for sharing your time and what looks like a slightly dimmer horizon than the past has been in terms of insurance. And I think, yeah, there is a large cohort of, you know, doctors that have come through in the last 5 to 10 years where even for me just coming out a little bit earlier, there was, you know, less competition. This part of the game has changed a lot as well. So, yeah, it's definitely more challenging. For people say that the younger generation's got it easy. I'm not sure that they necessarily do when I look at the issues of the new graduates that are coming through. Mm-hmm. How can listeners learn more about you, get connected, and maybe even have a conversation?
Absolutely. So please reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm sure Andrew will put my LinkedIn in the show notes. I would spell my name, but we'd be here all day. So please add me on LinkedIn, Sasha Ludkovsky. I work at Profile Financial Services, so you can also look at our company's website. But definitely LinkedIn and our website, and you can reach out to me that way, and then I'm happy to start any conversations. Whether your listeners have questions, just want to hit me up for some questions, or they'd like to speak to me, you know, at a more technical level, absolutely happy to help.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for your time today, Sasha. Have a great
day. Thanks, Andrew. Always a pleasure.
Thanks for hanging out with me today. If you learned something new, please share the episode with your family and friends. I'd love to get your feedback, so send questions, comments, and recommendations to me at andrew@medicalmoney.com. See you in the next episode.